Welcome to the Rock. Hey everybody, welcome into a Thursday afternoon quarterback. I am his agent, and in the immortal words of Michael Jordan, he has a brief statement that he wants to share with you. He just said simply, "I'm back."
David said it's like the old days. He said, "You show up at two minutes before we go on the air." He used to give me hell about that, but I showed up about an hour early today. So appreciate you guys coming. Look forward to this.
Yeah, if Brown was coming to a radio broadcast to go on at 2:30, about 2:28, start looking at the watch, and our engineer would always say, "Brown's not here yet." I was like, "He's got 2 minutes. He's got 2 minutes, plenty of time." So it's awesome to see all of you guys again. Certainly, we're here because of two things, really. One, because Alex took your money and made you come here. But in all seriousness, this year has been special on so many fronts to be able to think about this being 10 years now since that magical day up in Ann Arbor, magical third national championship, and all of the fun things that happened in that year. You've aged really well, by the way, 10 years. But we wanted to have the opportunity, and Alex and Big C have done a great job organizing this, to be able to just have this kind of open forum, casual conversation about some of the memories that certainly Coach Moore has, but all of us have. And we're going to give you the opportunity to ask questions and share your comments and things like that along the way, because this is our history. You know, this is what this program has been built on. Alex and I were talking the other night. You know, some of the guests they've had here on the podcast, thanks to Brownie's Rolodex here, have shown off an incredible history that this program has. And it goes much beyond 2007. It goes beyond 1995. It goes all the way back to the 1930s. There are programs that would kill to have the kind of long-term success that Appalachian State has had. And to give birth to some of the brightest minds in college football today that were part of staffs, part of teams, people that sweat the sweat and bled the blood. And they all got that started here. And certainly Coach Moore's legacy is that not only was he able to continue that, he was able to build on that to a level that that we all know is higher than any other football program in this state especially has ever been able to attain. So without any further ado, we would like to turn things over to a man who single-handedly keeps Vidal Sassoon in business. Please welcome Alex Johnson.
That is so not true. It's Tresemme. First of all, that's very rude. How dare you? I'm sponsored by them, by the way. They pay me to do this and to look like this. First of all, Big C and I both thank you, everybody, for buying a ticket and supporting the Black and Gold podcast. This is I was telling my brother as I was driving up this morning that to think that when we started this in my garage, who remembers the cricket? Anybody remember the cricket? Okay. When we started this with the cricket in my garage, that we would be sitting at a table with Steve Brown, David Jackson, and Coach Moore, it was really, I mean, we were over our heads, you know, in that mindset. And so being here today is awesome. So we thank everybody for being here and supporting us. I mean, that's what you're doing. And want to thank Casa Resca, CR Catering, and Ricky Bedroni. Where's Ricky? Is Ricky around here?
He's looking for chairs.
He's looking for chairs. Okay, fine. But we really want to thank Ricky Pedroni for working with us and being the sponsor for this event. He's a diehard App fan, and he loves what we're doing in terms of appreciating where we are. But really, you know, in order to fully appreciate where you are, you have to understand how you got there. And Coach Moore is very passionate about that. And Steve, one of the first conversations Steve and I ever had on the phone, this is the first conversation, he said, "I really want to acknowledge some of the players and the teams that came before me and that I was a part of and everything else because it's important." And so that's why we're here. That's why we're here. And want to thank our sponsors, the Z-Box Mattress guys. Wave your hands, guys. We're the Z-Box Mattress guys.
Just wait, stand up.
Stand up. Let's stand up. Z-Box Mattress guys. There you go. And Steven Mechanic. He was rivaling me for best hair, I think. Just barely. And then James Milner. Where's James? There he is. James Milner of Apple. Yeah. It's a little dry, but it's okay. There's Ricky Pedroni. Everybody give a round of applause for Ricky Pedroni. Casa Resca, CR Catering. Thank you very much. And also, I do want to cover this, though. This is very important. when we were first starting out, we saw a picture on Twitter of David. I think he was watching a Cubs game, but he took a picture of his treadmill or whatever, but the BGP logo was on it. We're like, David Jackson's listening to our podcast. Do you remember that?
Right. He was like, I'm doing game prep. Doing game prep for you know, for this weekend when he was still broadcasting.
Yeah.
And he takes a picture of his laptop or something, and we're like, what is that?
My computer was affected with a virus, and that was the only thing that would come up.
But
it worked
from the very beginning. David suggested we get in touch with Steve Brown in the middle of his antique hunting, and it was great because he likes doing that. He likes talking about App State. He loves App State, but it goes beyond just who's on the field now. He loves what App State has represented and what we've been able to do. And I mean, really, I can't thank Steve and DJ enough. Big C and I really can't. So really appreciate those guys and Coach Moore, who from the very beginning, I mean, he didn't owe us the time of day, but I remember when Coach sat down with us the first time when we did the Michigan episode in August. Steve told him that we'd get him some pizza afterwards if he'd meet with us, and you didn't even know what we were doing. You didn't even know what it was. Yeah. We barely do either, so we're barely there with him. But the fact that Coach Moore really liked what we were doing about trying to acknowledge and remember the past, and he'll be the first guy to tell you that you know, it didn't start when I walked on campus in 1989. There was a very solid foundation for us to build, and so what we're here to do is to talk about the 2007 season, how important it was. I mean, it's 10 years, and we have some game running. We played some Big Ten school about 10 years ago that's playing on the TV right now. But we want to do this and acknowledge how we got there, why this season was important, and some of the memories, some of the small things that you will hear that you've never heard before. Believe every time, Big C and I talk about this all the time. Every time we get together, we end up hearing stuff that you know you think you know everything about the Michigan game or whatever, but you find something out new every time. But can't wait to dive into that today, and we're extremely grateful. We're also, I'm sorry, but we're grateful for Jeff Crum sitting in the back. Jeff has supported us in this microphone that I'm holding. Jeff has supplied us with it really came with a bad episode. There was a bad episode where he could barely hear us, and he messaged us. He was like, what are you doing exactly? And I told him, he's like, that's not good. That's not good. Yeah, give him a round of applause. Seriously. We have equipment that has allowed us to make better shows, honestly, and be more flexible. So thanks, Jeff Crum. And we also have Malachi Jones here, former player. What's up, Malachi? We got Malachi Jones here. He's been on the pod. He's here, and these guys love App State. And so we're thrilled to be here and really celebrate that 2007 season. Big C, I don't know.
I just can't believe you didn't remind everybody that Steve Mechanic played here.
Did he?
No, just more than just a sponsor.
Well, how many interceptions? Does anybody here have an interception?
Does in this room have an interception from when they played football at Appalachian State?
Anybody?
Stephen Mechanic does.
There you go. Stephen Mechanic's got an interception. That's right.
It was deflected, though, right? Or did you pick it off? True. Oh, so a self-pass. He's a self-aware guy. He wanted to pad his own stats. He got the pass breakup and the interception all at the same time.
That's hilarious. But one of the things that I wanted to acknowledge, at least, while we're here and talk about, we are playing. Did anybody know we're playing Georgia Southern tonight? Anybody know that? Anybody know? There you go. We played Georgia Southern in a playoff game 30 years ago known as the Ice Bowl. And Steve Brown was there on the sidelines. And I really wanted, because we talked about it a little bit on the pod, but because we're playing Georgia Southern tonight, and that was 30 years ago, so we're doing a 10-year thing for the 2007 season. But 30 years ago, we had a SoCon championship team. There's Miss Margaret. Margaret Moore's back there. She's really the genius behind the operations. We're thrilled that she's here too. But Steve, can you give us some highlights, especially of Irk Russell wearing a T-shirt of the Ice Bowl in 1987?
As Richie Williams would say, it's real cold out there.
Real cold.
We came out and you kind of back then you had a little bit of a weather forecast. We knew it was gonna be cold, so I didn't like the cold, especially don't like it the older I get, but I came out like the Michelin man. I had like 8 layers and about 3 toboggans, and somebody told me to duct tape your feet, put Vaseline on them. I mean, we're going to crazy extremes. And we walk out there, and Coach Woods had a thing where he didn't want anybody out there coach except him meeting Irk Russell. So we let Sparky go out, and everybody's like, all right, Sparky's out, let's go out. And we get out there, and the wind's blowing 90 miles an hour. And I look, and Irk Russell, and he had the shaved head, and he was still lifting at the time. He's got on about a medium sweatshirt on. He needs an XXL. I'm like, this guy has lost his mind. And his skin was about the color right here of Coach Moore's glass right there. And the coaches were all taking bets on the sidelines, like, how long is it going to take for him to cave in? And you could see he was just walking around. We'd get cold and had stuff in his pocket. He's trying to keep moving, kicking his feet. And we see him start trotting in after about 3 minutes on the field after him and Coach Woods had shook hands. He went back in. He came out looking like the Michelin man after that. And what happened is, I remember, David probably remembers this story, but had in the old days you had to go get a machine from the town to clear the field. And what they did, they cleared it so well that it became a sheet of ice, which really helped us because they were really talented to run a triple option. We were better defensively than we were offensively. We blocked a couple kicks. I think we won 19-0. To shut them out that day was.
That's it.
I was 10 years old when that happened, but I do remember that. Yeah.
We have a stat confirmation from Big C that it was 19-0.
Right.
19-0. All right. Okay. All right. Yeah.
They're still looking to score.
And we won. I mean, the important thing is we won. We played George Sutter. It was really cold, and we won, and we beat them. And we, you know, one of the coolest things from, I think, this season is, and another reason why Steve has been so good to the show is, you know, he's booking all these guests. I mean, literally he's booked every guest that we've had. And you realize, and we're talking about this here in a little bit, about how good those teams were and how good those players were on those teams. And it's good to acknowledge those things. But we're not here to talk about 1987. That would be kind of a different thing. But Big C, 2007. What happened in 2007?
Well, the hardest thing about 2007 was backing ourselves up for the past 2 years and playing someone, you know, like that Big Ten school up north. And that was a big deal. You know, they were just coming out of the Rose Bowl. They played a very fast team. They played Oregon the second week. I think they played Southern Cal, and Southern Cal was doing something very similar that year with a spread offense and just beat them up and down the field. And this was the playbook was right there. And then Oregon was doing the same thing we were. We probably were copying them, right, Coach Moore? And then they just were like, well, you know, they beat them 38-7 the following week. And Michigan was really, really in a hurt there for a couple games. And they were 0-2, and they were really in the down and outs. We know how it feels to lose two in a row, right? Doesn't feel good, does it, at any point?
Way to bring that up.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
It's a festive event.
We can still be festive.
I think Charles just asked you, did you personally have the USC playbook in your back pocket to beat Michigan?
I did talk to their line coach. As an interesting conference, his name is Pat Rule. He coached the offensive line for Southern Cal. And he told me, he said, Coach, he was at Texas A&M when I was at Nebraska. And he told me, he said, Coach, if you're ahead of them in the middle of the third quarter, you'll win. And we were ahead of them in the middle of the third quarter. There wasn't a lot of X and O going on. It was more philosophical stuff and the crowd. And then the other thing, that other guy that I talked to that had a big influence, you know, on me, the way I thought going into the game, well, not going into the game, going into preparation for the game. That was what was huge. Not to get the game was, but preparation. It's like anything else in your life. The preparation for it is what's important. But it was John Settle. John Settle was coaching the running backs at Wisconsin at that point. And he said, Coach, you're going to be shocked. You see all that concrete and all those people in that stadium. He said, they don't make any noise. He said, it's not any noisier in there than it is at in Boone. He said, they sit on their hands like they're at the opera or something like that. And then, you know, he said, you know, when something happens, you know, they get excited about it and stuff like that. But those two statements really had a lot to do with the way I perceive things that might happen. And then we've all been in ball games and that you'd like to. Well, I'll give you Richmond the two years later against Richmond. Here, we didn't play very well. And we had a good football team, and you really, the old cliche, you try to get ready at halftime, it's too late. And that's about what happened at Michigan. They have terrific talent. They went on and beat Florida in the Citrus Bowl. But I think the preparation thing, those two statements were really key as far as preparation for the Michigan game.
So how you say get ready at halftime is too late. So the formula for that run in 2005, 6, and 7, then culminating into 2007, what were the things that allowed us to be prepared so that we weren't having to get ready at halftime for those years?
Well, when you say that, it makes me think about me getting ready for being here today. Steve,
you were on time.
Well, Steve said something. Somebody gave him hell about not doing this or that. Well, I just got through working out, and I was sitting in a steamer, and Margaret came down and said, "You're supposed to be there."
That's why I call her the first lady. I text her. She said, "We're not leaving yet. We're leaving in 10 minutes.
You don't want to get on her bad side, I do. But, you know, as far as – I forgot now what you wanted me to talk about.
Was it a good steam?
Halftime? You know, you sometimes you picture things being completely different than they really are. There's never been any, and that's the reason I think I told you about preparation. I never have been one of those rah-rah guys, holler and grab a guy and get up in his face and shake him and all that kind of stuff. I might do it on Thursday or might do it on Tuesday, but I'm not going to do it on Saturday. And the thing I remember talking to him about at halftime there is that we're really organized. I mean, we were always, I thought, that way. You broke out down in your groups, and then we got, and then everybody comes back together, and I got them for 2 or 3 minutes. And the last thing that I told them was, you're fixing to see the best football team in the next 10 minutes of this game that you're going to see since you've ever been playing football. So what you catch from Michigan the next 10 minutes will be the best football you've ever played in. And I said, you're going to remember it the rest of your life. And then I told them, and I write this on coins. When I play golf with guys, I write on a coin, don't mess it up.
That's true. Yeah, you wrote that on a coin of mine. You wrote something else.
Anyway, that was the gist of halftime. We didn't need a bunch of rah-rah stuff. We just needed to keep on doing what we were doing and expecting the very best that we would see from Michigan.
Hey, so everybody out here had that moment probably where they said, man, this is really going to happen. And you became invested in it to the point where you had that, this is really going to happen, oh, man, I really hope this happens kind of moment. You know, there was that fine line. When did you, and I know coaches think that their team can win every game and every play is going to be successful, but when did you feel like your team was in it for the long haul and this wasn't just a good showing to start a game, that this was something that you could really, really pull off?
You know, they took the opening drive and never had a hard third down play. I mean, they just zam, bam, bam, bam. And I looked up there at the scoreboard to see if they had a place for 3 digits because Because I said this soccer could be a long afternoon, and then we hit that. I really didn't do that.
I did.
When I was coaching in North Texas, we played BYU, and the guy was a Chicago Bears, the quarterback.
McMahon
was the quarterback, and that same thing happened. I said, "Oh, geez!" And we ended up, it was like a 4-point game when it was over, kind of like our ball game. But I forgot what we were talking about.
When did I feel like we were playing the
turning point? Well, it was not when Dexter made the run on that. That's kind of like hitting a kickoff return or something like that. When I felt really comfortable about us and our opportunity, certainly that was big because that made the score 7-7. But the next possession, we ran the football inside. Our offensive line did as good a job against their people as we did in the 24 years I was coaching here. Sean did a great job getting them ready to play. I'm talking about you don't get them ready to play Saturday afternoon. I mean preparing them to play the spring, the summer. And then the fact that Kevin that we could run the ball inside on them. And third and four, we could make we had an opportunity to mix it up. We could throw it, we could run it. And that was when we – and in the third quarter, when we ran the ball on them, I felt like, hey, we if we don't mess up – and we threw two interceptions, had two interceptions the second half. And we did almost mess it up. But when we could run the ball on them, I felt like we had a chance to really win the ball game. And something that now I don't get the chance to talk to it about very much. We worked hard on special teams all during the spring and all during fall. I can't tell you how many kicks we blocked. We blocked enough kicks, PAT field goals, not punts. But we didn't want to muff a punt. We worked hard on that, you know, fielding the ball. We didn't want the ball to hit the ground and roll another 12 yards. But I can't tell you how many punts, I mean, PAT and field goals we blocked. And when they caught the long ball and got down in position to kick the field goal, I'm saying, you know, most time I just walk around with that little piece of paper in my hand, my arms folded and stuff like that. But I'm standing on the sideline, and they're fixing to kick that field goal, kick at the field goal. And our sideline behind me, the players that were there behind me, they wasn't one of those turn your caps on sideways or do something goofy, lock arms and all that kind of stuff. It's just like it's an echo. We'll block it. We'll block it. We'll block it. There wasn't any loud stuff. There wasn't any – but they just had a confidence in themselves. And they'd seen it in practice. They'd seen – I didn't know it was going to be Corey. Didn't have a clue. But Corey Lentz, what time does that game start tonight?
7:30.
We got a captured audience. I got to share this with you. Sometimes I forget where I am as far as talking about stuff because I'm thinking about other things. I'm gonna go all the way back to. Is it okay to do this?
Yeah, go for it. It is. I mean, is it okay for him to do that? Yeah,
they approved. Paid, hadn't they?
Yeah,
they paid. You already got – all right. 2005, we opened the season against Eastern Kentucky up at their place. They got a good football team. It's a tough ball game. There's 15 seconds maybe, 8 seconds left in half. And they got a really quick wide receiver over on our sideline. We're on defense. They did kind of a tunnel screen. Terminology-wise, it's just a white gals. It's just a wide receiver coming down, almost down the line of scrimmage, and they just throw it to him real quick, and they crack somebody, and then they kick a guy out, and he's down the boundary. Corey Lentz is on the opposite side of the field. He's the corner on the opposite side of the field. And this guy gets a clean shot. He's coming down. He gets the ball. Gets the block, turning down the field. He's got to run 60 yards on his sideline. Corey Lentz is over on the other side. He comes all the way across the field. Now, this is 2005. This isn't 2 seconds or 3 seconds left to go in the game. He's coming across that field, and he knocks that receiver out of bounds, probably at the one-yard line or half-yard line. It's close. And we go in. We got a little lead, and we go in at halftime ahead. And we come back and we win the ball game. Well, it's just another great play, and you don't think much about it. But somebody said something a while ago, Steve, as you get older, you get colder. You get older, you think about things too. I think that's one of the most critical plays that I've been involved in my coaching career. Most players would have stopped. They'd have hit a run. He'd have given a great effort for 45 or 50 yards. But to keep on going and knock that player out of bounds, I think that the block field goal against Michigan is a direct result of his intensity and the way that he practiced. You know, he picked that ball up with one hand, and he won. The point I'm making is a lot of times in practice, even as a coach, you'll see guys and we've all witnessed it. You see guys in practice make a half-hearted effort to block a kick. all during 2 days. There was that never happened once, and I've got all this documented, so to speak. For one reason or another, I wrote all these things down during 2 days, where we kicked the balls from, where the results of it, all that stuff. And all the time, those corners and the people that we wanted to use to block kicks were always diving, lunging for balls, blocking the balls, stuff like that. So I went all the way back to 2005 thing. And that's just the way our players practiced. I mean, I know you'd almost have to see the play that I'm talking about against Eastern Kentucky.
So would you say that it was a combination of, well, I mean, I don't know, a combination of certain players from 2005 meshed with your approach as a coach and a staff that allowed 2005, then 6 and 7 to happen, or was it before that?
Oh, I think it's way before that. Let me tell you something. When I came here in 1989, I didn't come in here and have to rebuild a program. I came in here with a bunch of good players and a good coaching staff that had been here before. I've never taken that for granted. I was at a place at Texas Tech that we didn't have enough players to even have a scrimmage in the spring. I can tell you about building a program, and this wasn't one. This wasn't one of them. We had good players and things like, and that's one of the things that when Alex started talking to me about this function today. This is something else John Settle said. I wish I could say Jerry Moore said it. I redid a card after my departure from Appalachian State. And it's got that stuff on there. You got your name and your phone number and all that. But the one thing I got from John Settle, the last thing he said to me when he told me after he finished that about the people sitting on their hands, he said, "Coach, tradition never graduates. If you find a card from me, you're going to see that that's on that card. I got something on the back of it, but tradition never graduates." And I think that when Alex started talking to me about this gathering right here, this is a, I hate to word it this way, this is about the Steve Browns. It's about the Taylor Lambs. It's a tradition. Appalachian has got a rich, rich tradition. I didn't know that. I couldn't spell it and couldn't pronounce it. And for God's sake, I didn't know where it's located. I mean, but the thing I would like to see happen is a great Letterman's Association come from it. And I'm not just talking about football. My whole life's been football. But my whole life has been sports. My whole life's been competing in whatever it is. I go play golf right now. But to get a Letterman's group that is awesome. We had a group here in 05, the honor to 05, first national championship team. There weren't 10 guys. Walk out there to the 20-yard line or 15-yard line, come on back. And it didn't. And I'm not knocking. And that would be, I'd feel the same way if it's any other sport. I just don't know the other sports that much, what all is accomplished, particularly in the history, the back history of Appalachian. I mean, they had a deal this summer at a legacy thing or whatever deal at Linville. And they're talking about your linebacker,
Dino
Hackett, being one of the best players ever played here. You got a couple guys that have been in the Pro Bowl that are not even in the North Carolina Hall of Fame. And, you know, that's not right. And I'm just for building a strong, strong Letterman's group from every sport.
And even DJ can be part of it.
No.
Okay.
He's a huge part.
Block no kicks.
I mean, that is. He's a huge part of it.
Coach, you know, you're talking about tradition in history, and, you know, we see right now Coco's on the screen. We've seen Armani. We've seen Leonard Love's interception, things like that. Of those groups, you know, you had those headline guys, the guys that were all conference, guys that were all Americans. Who were some of the ones that maybe fell a little bit under that radar that you will always have with you, whether it was a John Holton? He eventually made all conference. But those type of guys, those blue-collar guys that you recruited to help set the culture of what that program was all about at such a critical time in its history.
One of the first guys that comes to mind, he wasn't in that group, but it was at Sean Elliott. You know, that's another great story. His dad called me the last week of recruiting, and he said they'd won the state championship at Camden, and said, "Coach, everybody on this team's getting recruited, but my son." And I said, "Well, come on, we got a walk-on weekend coming up here, last weekend. Come on up here." But I said, "We don't have a scholarship." And so he said, "Well, we'll come visit." So he came up here and visited, and we didn't have a scholarship. Well, we lost a player that over the weekend. And so I called his dad back, and I was just kind of hem-hawing around about like I am right now, trying to tell him we had a half scholarship. And I didn't get the words out of my mouth good, and he said, "We'll take it." And Sean came up here and was a really good player. Scott Satterfield was the same way. He was probably – Kevin Richardson's got to be right at the top of the list. I mean, we did a deal called Phipps. He couldn't even run a fifth. I mean, it's one lap around the track. I mean, around the football field. And I'll go ahead and tell you, he smoked a lot and didn't, you know, he's just a kid from a small town and didn't, he didn't know what he was getting into, really. And I give our son Chris a lot of credit for Kevin Richardson. I mean, he broke some habits that he had and coached him. And but there's been just the list would go on and on. And I think of Matt Stevens. Matt Stevens, a guy that if you had to pick one guy, it might be Matt. But there's been so many. You know, I played at Baylor and I coached at SMU. Both of them are private schools. He didn't have many walk-on kids. Then I went to Nebraska. I'm going to share another thought with you in a minute, if I don't forget it. I got to Nebraska. They were like ants. I mean, they were players everywhere. I mean, they were just ants all over the place. They're big old red ants. But they, I never seen so many players. And there was only one other school, there were two little schools, but then the University of Nebraska, Omaha. Every kid in Nebraska wanted to go to school at the University of Nebraska. This was the key. I'm walking to practice. Back then, we didn't have a signing date, and we recruited year round. And I'm walking to practice with Cletus Fisher, the line coach there. His brother Pat Fisher played for the Cardinals and a couple of the NFL teams. The Fishers in Nebraska are about like David is here. They're the rock. They're the solid people.
Wow. Red-headed.
Yeah. Now we can break up. But anyway, I walk into practice, and I'm looking at the sheet. I've got practice stuff here, and I don't even know what it is. We hadn't even met. And Cletus said, and I use this a lot, he said, "You'll never hear a Nebraska coach say that kid will never play." And that was the first day I went on a practice field when I was coaching in Nebraska. And it became true, not at Tech, not in North Texas, but it came true for me here at Appalachian State. We never told anybody that they couldn't play or they wouldn't hear. And I'd go ahead and share this too. I've been wanting to get this off my chest for a long time. And when they were searching for an athletic director here, we were in Louisville at the National Football Coaches Convention, and I got a fax back then. It was a fax that they wanted me to cut 15 players. 15 players off our football team. Well, that was going to be walk-on football players. Cut 15 walk-on players. And I faxed Jay was a guy that had – Jay didn't do it. Jay had to send the fax.
He was the messenger.
He was the messenger. Right. And I faxed Jay back. I said, Jay, I'm not going to cut any players off this football team. I'll talk to you about it when I get back. So when I got back, I went in there to see him and said, Coach, I said, you don't have to explain anything to me. I know it wasn't you. He was a walk-on player for us. He was a great kicker for us. But anyway, I said, I'm not cutting anybody. Well, the way it worked out, it kind of all went away. But I would not have cut. I gave him a name, and I won't tell you who. If you want to cut somebody, cut this guy. And they took a back seat right there. But it's important to build the program with those walk-on. Those are guys that want to be in your program. They're not guys that have been five-star guys and have been recruited by this guy and this guy, and they sit down and weigh it all out. They're glad that you want them. And that's the reason I think we've had success with walk-on football players.
Well, and you developed them.
Yeah.
You know, we used to talk about that all the time. You know, you go back to Kevin Richardson. 2014, I remember sitting out at a practice right before the season started, or 2004, sorry. 2004, we're out of practice right before the year starts and getting ready to go to Wyoming. That was the first year of the spread, and all this new stuff's going on. So, sorry, I didn't mean to say a word. Sent you under the table there for a second.
Was the birth of the spread.
Yeah,
and almost a death.
Spread. Yeah. But we're out there watching all these new plays and new way we're doing things, and there's this new running back. He's a walk-on kid, and he returned two consecutive kickoffs for touchdown in practice.
Yeah.
He ran the first one back. He came back to his spot. They said, get back in there, and he did it again. And that guy, after the second one, fell down in the end zone and laid there for about 15 minutes. And he became the school's all-time leading rusher. And that was because of coaching. And we used to talk about it all the time. You know, you get a guy that would come in with a certain skill set, and he'd leave as an All-American. Hmm. Because they didn't come in and rest on what somebody did. They developed kids along the way, and you were able to get the Zach Johnsons and Matt Kleins out of somebody that was
– Scott Suttles.
The Scott Suttles that came in as that – you know, one of the last names on the sheet on signing day and turns into one of the most important players – that you had in a given game or given situation. And that's because you never quit on those guys and you develop talent along the way.
So about walk-ons and developing them and Kevin Richardson, I'm gonna give away a magnet. I know this is priceless. You don't even understand. This is made out of like very fine magnets.
Magnet stuff.
But we have a trivia question, and whoever gets it right, get a magnet just for fun. Big C.
Throw your hand up if you've got it. So
don't blurt it out. Let's play nice.
Everybody knows what number Kevin Richardson wore for 3 years, right?
What was it?
28. 28. So in his freshman year, he wore a different number. Who knows it?
You like this, DJ?
Do you know that?
No.
Do you?
Right, so just somebody throw
no one knows
up
it?
For a guess. All right.
34.
Not 34. There it is.
Google, you get a magnet.
Who was that? Was that Steven?
He's or you're lucky.
He's in always going to win a magnet.
Like having an employee win a prize that's sponsored by the company.
At least somebody knew it. At least somebody knew it.
So somebody knew around it. Steven who's sitting close.
All right, you get a magnet.
You bought those magnets anyway, Steven. Come up again.
That's right. Thanks, Steven. How's that for ROI?
Whoa.
A fumble, coach. That's a fumble.
Hey, and also speaking
don't
of.
Don't mess it up.
first turnover of the night.
And also speaking about Sean Elliott, do you remember, Steve, what Coach Elliott said about being offered that scholarship?
Oh, yeah. He said he would come for nothing. And he said Coach didn't get out of his mouth. We like basically said, hell yeah, we're coming. They were coming there, and he told the whole story when we interviewed him. It's pretty neat to hear about his thoughts about, you know, what he thought about Coach Moore and the program and all that. Pretty neat to hear. And I do think that guys like Sean, I used to love to watch him coach because he would get after you and tell you the truth. I like those kind of guys. And those kind of guys set the tone And what Coach Moore won't tell you when he took over Sparky, because I was with Sparky 86 and 87, and I moved on to Mars Hill. But when he came here, a lot of guys were kind of setting their ways. And how many guys you have quit? I mean, you had
54
guys quit on him. And Ruffin talked about this. And he said, Coach, they kind of had a code. If you're leaving because your girlfriend, just throw up a one. If you need some more money, throw up a two. And you're not happy with your playing time, throw up a three. So these guys started coming to the door, and you and Ruffin said, what is it? Well, it's a one. And the guy would leave. But to come back from that and build off of that when you lose 54 guys out of probably 85, that's an amazing story to hear, really.
You know, those guys that left, a lot of them have come back. And the only, I mean, just talking, I'm going to call them good buddies, friends. But most of them felt a little bit jilted. They'd been recruited by those guys, and it wasn't like we came in there and made it so hard he couldn't stand it and trying to run guys off. It was a good relationship, and we've got a good relationship. But I'd say most all those players that left, they just didn't understand. And a lot of times when a coach leaves, like when Sparky went to South Carolina, he took every coach with him. There wasn't anybody left over to kind of tell us about a player or this player, stuff like that. And they just, like I said, they just felt a little bit jilted.
So we're going to break things up here. I know we've talked – you know, what I think this is really a story of how you get to a season like 2007 that really – and we've talked about this. I mean, 2007 wasn't necessarily the best team in App State history, but what it was – and we mentioned this on this week's episode – it was an extremely important season because we were able to capitalize on that game that we played at Michigan, and we're able to back that up by winning, you know, the third. I mean, back-to-back's one thing, but three in a row, the amount of energy and focus and execution that it would have to take, I mean, it's unbelievable. But we're talking about the foundations that got us to 2007 and, frankly, to today. I mean, who thinks that we are today where we are without that jolt from the Michigan game? I mean, how many people do we know in just life that when you say Appalachian State or App State, they know it because of what happened in the 2000s? I mean, we know that. We all know that. So we'll take a break here. Not a break, but from us talking. If anybody's got a question, this is like the in-person hashtag BGP Mail Satchel, sponsored by Stephen Mechanic. But if anybody has a question, let us know. We have a mic there. So if anybody wants to ask Coach Moore a question about anything or make a statement or whatever. We got one right here, Matthew.
Coach Moore, how did you convince Scott Satterfield to go from a running back to a Lion? When we played them in high school, he was a fullback. So when he got up here, I thought that's where he was going to play.
One more time.
Scott Settle, we said he played.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the first part of it. I was talking. My bad. Scott Settle, when he came here, was just one of those guys that was a hard worker. And as a freshman, we knew he wasn't going to play as a freshman. But the intensity that he had as a scout team player, and I told Sean, I said, hey, we got to find a place for this guy to play. And Sean's, his first thought was, say, Coach, he's too small to be a center, because he had been an average-sized linebacker in high school. But in spring practice, I mean, he won our hearts, so to speak, with the way that he practiced, the way he played. And then not only that, but his ability. I mean, he was you love to have, you know, guys that can play linebacker like to hit. And so that was the probably the biggest thing about him, and just total all-out effort. Just he was fun to watch. And when you get a guy like him, other players feed off of him. It's just a domino effect. And I think that was the biggest thing that Scott brought to the table. And the biggest concern I had at Michigan was when he got hurt during two-a-days, to me, the key to our offensive line was going to be standing over there with me. And we had a freshman kid from Gaffney.
Yep.
Brad played Irvin. His first.
Brad Irvin, yeah.
Yeah, he played in front of about 3,000 people the last game he played in front of, and there's 109,000 there.
Yeah.
But Scott was just a great example.
He was a little bit of a victim of circumstance, too, in that part of the discussion was him about fullback, and fullbacks went away because of the change to the spread in 04. There were a couple of guys. Mike Metcalf was probably the last recruited, played their fullback that App had.
We have another trivia question, actually, that we're going to ask. This is for another priceless magnet, Big C.
We talked about 2007. Everybody remembers a lot of those games that happened in the playoffs. I think everybody remembers James Madison for Pierre Banks. Everybody remembers the Armenia we're showing against Richmond and, of course, Delaware. But I think that game that gets forgotten is that Eastern Washington playoff game. Second-round game here. I mean, it was very cold. First person put their hand up. What was the final score of that game?
49-21.
Oh, no. That was the Delaware game. Delaware National Championship was 49-21. Or 49-14.
Not that he remembers.
But, all right.
Anybody else?
Somebody else.
Score, Eastern Washington.
Just a guess. It's okay.
These are next level questions.
It was in the 30s. It was in the 30s.
Start with something easier.
I thought these were easy.
What color was their uniform?
All right. Who knows the color of the Eastern Washington Eagles uniforms?
Red.
And
white.
All right. Okay. That works. That's two of the three.
A priceless magnet just for you.
38-35.
Write that down. Everybody brought their notepads? 38-35.
The second page of trivia questions.
The second page. You don't want to see the other ones.
Intermediate level.
We're asking for Armani's quarterback rating for the second half of 2006. I'm just kidding. We're not asking that. We're not asking that. But so anybody else have a question? It could be about 2007 or anything else. Let's live in person, hashtag BGP mail satchel. Hey, I got a question. How many students or recent grad, like when I say recent, last 2 years, how many younger fans do we have here? How many current students? Raise your hand really high. That's cool. See, that's cool. Steven, you graduated like 5 years ago. Couple.
Keep hold on to that dream.
How many of you graduated from Appalachian State Teachers College? Brown, throw your hand up.
That's brutal, man. What are you doing? That is brutal. But I like seeing the students that are here that are trying to appreciate and better understand the past and in this 2007 season. I mean, I think it's really awesome. But Big C, this event about 2007 from the world's most famous App State fans perspective, when 2007 the season pops up into your statistic ridden brain, what do you think about that season as a whole? What are the words that come to mind?
I wish we'd have beaten Wofford and Georgia Southern. I think that was the thing that a lot of people thought about after that first game was, and some of my friends, and we still think of that to this day, is, we can't lose another one because it might be a disappointment. No offense, Coach. It was okay.
It worked out.
But, but honestly, though, it was I say this a lot. We had a target on our back going into that Michigan, and then it probably grew three times. That size, we lost to ranked Wofford on the road, and we had a turnover-ridden game against Georgia Southern. We kind of started in a hole, but came back and gave it our all that game. But to me, that's it. Sorry, DJ, getting a little greedy.
I think nobody understands. Coach can touch on this a little bit. Armani got banged up.
Right.
Oh, he was
right.
Very hurt. Yeah.
You don't win the national championship in 07 without Trey Elder.
Course.
And that again is another key to development. Here's a guy that was handed the keys in 06. He was a little dinged up in 06, but he could have very easily, to quote Coach Moore, had a pity party. And he didn't. He was the most supportive person of number 14's growth that there was on that sideline. And they were two peas in a pod for a long time. But again, Armani goes out after Michigan. You don't win. You don't beat Northern Arizona. You don't beat Citadel. You don't beat some of those other teams without Trey Elder as a viable option at quarterback on that team.
Well, I'm going to go back to another quarterback, Richie Williams. The first national championship game. We could go on and on and on, and what happens is like in this discussion, somebody says something and it triggers a thought. And the games that we were talking about losing when Armani was there, we were in the same circumstances almost with Richie, yet he plays the second half and we win. Those things are that's what I'm talking about, tradition. There were players that witnessed what happened with Richie that were on that same team when Armani got hurt. And it's just something that's inbred into, I'm going to call the program. And that's, I think, I don't keep up with it quite as much probably as I should. I'm gone a lot now. But evidently the running back now has been hurt. Now he's coming back. And it's just when you get good, solid programs, you function that way.
Steve, what was in your – because, I mean, you – I mean, actually, we could talk about Steve's –
This lady's got a question.
Oh, we have a question.
Margaret told me. No,
that's probably the truth. She had one ear, and no, the office coordinator had the other.
No, Trey Elder played the first half of that ball game. He did okay, but it wasn't us. It just wasn't the same. It just wasn't us, and that's being very vague about it. But the walk, when the final second ticked off that clock, I went straight to Sean. I went to Sean Elliott. I said, Sean, I'm gonna put start Richie the second half. He cannot get hit. You get those offensive linemen together in the corner of that locker room, and we're gonna go with Richie, sink or swim, we're gonna go with Richie. And he cannot get hit. You get that across to those guys in that locker room. And the best thing in the world that happened to us now is when early in the third quarter, he made a really big play. It was down the field where he had to limp. Everybody in the stadium saw him. Everybody on that sideline saw him. All those players saw him dragging that leg and getting into that. We didn't huddle then, but still in position to make the call of the play. When that happened, it's just like different light came on when those players saw that. Yeah, you probably remember as well as I do. Yeah.
I remember when we heard, and I think I was with you at the time, that morning there was this, the morning of the national championship game at 05, Richie had not practiced at all, really. And there was somebody on the staff said, hey, this morning they're going to go over and work out Richie at the stadium.
And we did.
Everybody in that travel party had their heart in their throat wondering what was going on with that workout. And it was nothing against Trey, but he was the heartbeat of that team.
Yeah.
And I remember them coming back, and there was a dejected look in the trainer's face. I thought, well, that didn't work out. But that was where everybody was. It was just kind of hanging on pins and needles to see Seven out there one more time and see what he could do. And Trey set him up, you know, kept the game more than competitive. But Richie had just a different swagger about the way he played and the way the team played when he was on the field.
See, and I like hearing stories, and I think everybody else does too. That, you know, when you say you're not the rah rah, hey, let's win it at halftime and everything else. Like, I believe that because you look at successful programs, the way you practice all the time and in repetition, that's what gets you there. However, there are moments where you do need to reach in and tell people, like, look, I know we're not, like, exactly, you know, ready for this particular moment of Richie not being 100% or whatever, but you tell those guys to reach in and do a little extra. There are those rah-rah moments in times of crisis, and I think well-developed programs that are disciplined and that are really working as a team. I mean, DJ, you talk a lot about how Trey Elder was the ultimate team player. I love hearing stories like that about, yeah, we're not rah-rah, yeah, that's not how you do it. But in particular moments where you need people to rise up and do well and to just make it, you got to make those requests to your coaches and say, seriously, no one touches them. And everybody's got to rise to that occasion.
Well, I've seen those coaches that slobber and all that stuff in the locker room and do all that stuff. But, I mean, that was a fact. When I was talking to Sean, that was just a fact. You get those groups, and I was standing back at probably hear that chess up there hearing him talk to those guys. Well, Sean's authoritative in everything that he says anyway. And it wasn't a big rah-rah thing. It's a fact. We got to do this. We got to protect that guy. He can't get hit. And then thank goodness we had two great defensive ends that hit their guys.
Hey, Brownie.
Yes, sir.
We play a game tonight. Who are you rooting for?
You gonna get on me by my sweater?
Yeah.
I do this all the time to mess with Jackson. First time I walked in, Alex busted me. So
disappointed Jackson. This sweater is the color of money. If you feel it right here, this is hard work right here. That's cashmere. That's straight up, like, what? Right off the lamb.
Or an eagle. Navy eagles, I guess.
Well, you know, you got a ex-Appalachian guy coaching there tonight.
That's right. Chad Lunsford. Yeah. Chad was on your staff in 01?
Yeah, he was. He was here 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
What was he?
He was on the staff that played them in the playoffs after the regular season.
Exactly. And he's a Georgia guy. And I called him when they made him the interim guy. And I told him, I said, look, this is the first and last call. I said, I can't call you anymore. But I wish you the very, very best. He and his wife, Tippy, were just they were a great asset to us. And he's taken over a really messy job, just like Sean had a year ago. And they played in a really tight ball game last week. There's three ex, if you count Scott Satterfield, there's three ex players for us, or two players and one coach, in the conference right in the Sun Belt. But I told him, I said, I can't call you anymore. I'll call you after the Appalachian game, but I'm through.
Okay. I was waiting for you to pile on about Steve wearing Navy on the day we're playing a Navy team. But that's okay. But let's go back to Steve Brown. How would you, as somebody, I mean, this is 40 years since your freshman year, and that's a really big deal too, 1977. The earth was cooling at that point.
You're an old sucker.
Global warming wasn't even a thing.
I show up for this abuse.
We love
paid
Steve
to be
Brown.
Here, actually.
We love Steve Brown. But so you've seen a lot of App State football. How would you define, in your own words, 2007, that season?
Well, I think everything, like Coach said, and he and I talked a lot about, and we had Jeff Dillman on the show the other night, the strength and conditioning guy. And I think Coach said he had one of his favorite pictures where, you know, Jeff was out there running the hound at him out there, and they were all together looking over the view. And I think the preparation, you have the talent, but, you know, I remember going down to the field before the game, come back here and tell David, I said, Michigan does not look like LSU looked a couple years back. They were shorter, they were thicker, didn't look as lean as LSU did. LSU had 6'3", 250 linebackers that could run. And Michigan had, you know, 6'1", 220 guys that were kind of pluggers. And I thought, you know, with our speed, with Armani, I always say that, if you got Armani pulling the trigger, you got a chance against anybody if you don't, as Coach says, don't mess it up. But I think the preparation he's talking about goes way back to that fall and that summer when a bunch of guys came up, probably coaches that stayed that summer, and got in really good shape. Because I thought that fourth quarter, it wasn't extremely hot that day. It was hot enough to if you play a lot of snaps.
Yeah.
And we didn't play a lot of people that day.
We had 27 players. There are a few guys on special teams that played, but really we just played 27 players.
And I thought in the fourth quarter, Dave and I talked about it off the air, that we're in better shape than you are. They're struggling and kind of had their confidence shaking a little bit. But I think when you talk about preparation, not only coaching and the culture that he built, but I think the strength conditioning, Michigan, we didn't catch Michigan off guard. We were just in better shape and better prepared coaching and mentally than they were.
So let's. Well, does anybody else have a question in the crowd? This is live, in person, 3D. There are only three dimensions at this point.
You guys got a question?
Mr. Mechanic. We got a question.
Mr. Mechanic.
I don't know if it's a question, but Coach Moore might want to make a comment about it. But from a fan's perspective, what I missed the most was the synergy that the town had, that the fans had for 40 months, started the 05 season, culminating in the championship in 2007. And everybody was pulled together, the town, the fans, the team, and just the effort that that took as a family to stay involved in that. I can only imagine holding it all together on your end. And I'm so impressed with that. And one thing that I think of was in 07, we had been going hard for 40 months. Every player was playing 15 games. Pierre Banks, his record. Emotional. Every single game. Devin Moore catch. Does not get any more beautiful than that. Fourth down catch in the middle of, towards the end of the game to keep that going. That all could have ended. So, you know, I was typing some notes out about this statement because I feel so strongly about it that at that point we were evolving. We became App State at that point, in my opinion. Yes, we had 60 years of tradition before that. But to become App State at that point, it culminated with that championship. The team was a team, and you know why? Because we had Owens, and all of the team was shoulder to shoulder with the coaches, forced to get along with each other. And they just got used to dealing with different groups. They saw the coaches in the building. They worked out right there, not on a floor down below. We announced that building, and we built this building. Coaches are separated up in these beautiful plush offices, weight room down below. We're not bumping into the hallway, serendipity, having conversations. And I always felt like, how could we keep it going after 40 months of what we did? And I think at the end of that time period, everybody, we kind of were thinking, okay, well, we're App State now. Oh, we got this building. And I'm thinking, ugh, how are we going to keep it going? What incentive do we have? I mean, the football building that Clemson built, after that, it didn't become as much about the football. All we're trying to do is get victories, not prance around in our building, not prance around about who we are. And I feel like, you know, trying to get to our bowl games the last couple years, that gave us something. It gave us something to be the old climb the ladder again. And I'm just making a statement that I miss those days because I remember as a family how exhausting it was week after week. And I remember I'm sorry if I'm going on, but I remember 2 weeks before Michigan, I'm out and about making sales calls all day long. I'm in a plant manager's office. I see the football up on the down in Troutman. I see the App State football up on his wall. And I said, oh, you're an App guy. He goes, oh, yeah. And I just casually asked him. I said, well, you going to the Big House? And he looked at me like I was crazy. Why would I want to go all the way up there and see us get our butts handed to us? But by that time, I felt like I was part of the team. And I answered right back to him. I said, how can you send our boys to the Big House and not go there to support them? Ooh. It was just natural. And I miss those days big time. And I just wanted to say that, Coach. I remember getting your autograph with Steven at the bus when you came back in 06. And I got it framed in my office. It's beautiful. Aww. When I took him to the Big House, he's first thing he says when he goes out there, huh, not that big. You know, that's Steven.
Great memories.
Like when you win at that point.
You're not making things any easier.
Give that man a magnet. Give that man a magnet. Yes.
I think what he's asking too, Coach, get your opinion. When you built we built a nice facility. Did you see anything change with the players? You have to talk to them about that, about going from, you know, Owens to the new building. Did you have to approach that? Did you have to approach the players with it? About going to such a nice
lost
building.
Lost the first game in it.
Yeah. You know, that was never much of an issue.
Brought up bad things earlier.
It really wasn't much of an issue. Facilities, that just happened. The things that happened that you, I think, are talking about are more people things. Mm-hmm. That's what was fun, the people things. You know, the more we talk, and just a while ago I mentioned the two defensive ends, Marcus Morrell and Sticks. We go on and on and on. You got people. It's about people. It's always been about people. The right people, and getting the right guys in the right spots, and the fans. I've been to every bowl except the Rose Bowl, as a player or as a coach. And now they got a jillion of them. But I'm talking when I grew up. One of the most exciting moments that I've had in my life was when we came back from Chattanooga the first time. I thought that there was an accident because they were out there around Fosco. There were fire trucks, and those lights on those police cars were all blinking. And then we go down into the intersection where the Wendy's and the banks are and the Exxon, turn that corner. From that corner to the field house, they're rocking that bus. People on the side just rocking, pushing on those buses. And I'll never forget that. The same thing happened that night when we got back from Michigan. It's probably worse that night. But, I mean, I thought there was a terrible accident out there around Fosco that first year.
The accident was the other team in Chattanooga, I think. I think what Dave said, actually, it's kind of striking me, as someone that, I was a freshman in 2007, and even experiencing the later part of that run, and understanding that, we were a Southern Conference team, we didn't have ESPN dictate our kickoff times, and from 2007, and we got the facilities and everything else. You understand this will never happen again in Southern Conference football, FCS football. I mean, ever. I mean, we were an FCS team scheduling small schools like Wofford and Elon and Citadel, everything at 3:30, regardless of whether Duke and Carolina or Duke and State are playing. Who cares? Who cares when they're kicking off? We're going to put 30,000 people in the stands, and we don't care what anybody else is doing. And that wave of how strong the culture was that you built, Coach, and how unified, like you said, Dave, about how unified everybody was around that team. I mean, that'll never happen. That was Camelot. I mean, what we're doing now is building on that foundation. These guys are telling their own story, and we'll remember the 2015 Camellia Bowl team, and they were awesome. But the reason we have been propelled to where we were able to play at a Camellia Bowl is from that time. And then, to your point, those mid-90s teams also being as good as they were to build just the culture and the program to where we were. I mean, it's just awesome. And so I mentioned this, and we're at 12:40 now. We say this thing ends at 1. But I wanted –
I was going to make a comment. It's kind of what you're talking about, to address what David just said. And I said it's all about people. People just like what you say. I get tired of people saying what you did, what I did. It was about what we did. You did never did very much. But when you get a town excited and you get alums excited, that's the answer. And I appreciate all the things that have happened individually. But they would have never happened. They would have never happened had it not been for the unity and the people in this town. I get tired of somebody saying what you did, because I don't always see Richie limping down the field. The different things that have happened here, those, like you mentioned, that picture of Jeff Dillman working those guys out, and the sun's coming up over the visitor side stadium. That's what we did, and we don't need to forget that it's what we did.
And especially everybody that Brown brings on the show now, it doesn't matter if it's someone like Charlie Coyner, who has really no he went to Catawba, I think, to play baseball, didn't really have any roots. He comes to App State just hoping to be able to be a coach, and in listening to how passionately he speaks about that those times. Or it could be someone like Steve Brown, who played here and then came back and coached here. I mean, it is, and this is something that actually David just mentioned on the last episode, which is how fortunate we are to have been able to say, hey, let's get together and celebrate the 10-year anniversary of our third championship in a row in a season where we shook the foundations of one of the most successful programs ever in Michigan, and we left our mark. And to the point where anybody you go out, and, like I said, in a professional setting, that's a calling card, and that'll echo forever. And so I asked this. I always said about this event, sell the sizzle, not the steak. But I'm going to ask this question. I'll ask it to Big C, actually. Is 2007 the most important season ever?
I think I've answered this once before, right?
I don't know. I don't listen to what you're saying.
You better answer it the same way.
It was very important by itself. If you had to separate one season, you got to say that's the start of something. You know, that's not really the start, but the end of something. That's where we really jumped off. That's where we hit something. That's where it puts us to where we were today. You know, obviously, yes. One championship, two championships are great, but the Michigan with that obviously is a huge deal. So, yes, put it by itself on a plate, the best. We needed that. That was our big hump.
Okay, but we have Daddy Haynes now here in the back. Daddy C.
And I don't need a mic.
I don't think Chuck does either.
Alex, if I may. Thanks, Coach. Thanks, Coach.
That was awesome. Don Haynes, thank you, sir. The original. You're responsible for him and his fandom. You know that, right? We wouldn't have a Black Gold podcast without Don Haynes. Thank you very much. Do you have an opinion on most important? I don't think you answered it.
I answered it the other night. I said
I wasn't listening.
I said it was a tough question because I don't know that while to everything that Big C said, 07 was, you know, it was another one of those great foundation setup opportunities. You probably aren't here today unless you have that or that certainly helped fuel that. I remember the building was in its formative stages at that point, and it grew a little bit as some of the donations came in after that. But I also think, as what Coach Moore has alluded to, you've got so many other things that set up that moment. How can you take credit away from 95 in a situation where if many of you are probably like me, that what I knew about Appalachian State football before I came to Boone was because of my elementary school teachers and my high school teachers, and they all had Black Saturday posters in their rooms, and that was what we knew about the program. So 95 comes along. I'm a senior in high school. This team is the first one to finish a year undefeated in North Carolina football history. And that sold 98, 99, 2000, semifinal team. That 2000 team was just as good as any of those three national championship teams were. You know, that set up that group. Does Joe Best come to school here without Scott Satterfield completing that pass against the Citadel in 95? Does Joe Best being in school here help sell Jock Roman on being in school here? And he's playing a huge part in the game that's almost about to end. I wonder how it finishes. So I think those things, I think there's a needle that's threaded through 07 is maybe the logo on the front of the blanket, but there's a lot of other really meaningful teams, moments, and history that went on long, decades before 07 ever came to be.
Yeah, and I think that's, when you say most important, it doesn't mean the best or most valuable, rather. I keep going back personally, and Steve, I want to know what you think, too, because, I mean, you go out in your professional life, and when you mention Appalachian, I just think it's different pre-07 than post. I think by that national kind of shockwave, that recognition or whatever, you could say recognition that was deserved before that. You know, before we started the podcast and we started having a Steve on the show and then him bringing on different guests, I was of the opinion that 2007 was the best team we've ever had. But I don't believe that anymore. You know, but that's not always the thing. I don't know what you think, Brown, about the importance.
I think Coach may speak this. I think one of the things that led to Richie's run in the three national championships in 04, I think he won every home game and lost a bunch of tough road games, But you could see the spread working. You could see some things in the making. I think we started getting more physical on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And that's what I remember about the 95 team. They were just bludgeoning you on both sides of the ball. We go to Boise State, and that's where Boise State is what they have become, and played them toe-to-toe, and they were a very good football team. But I think 04 was a big season to kind of leapfrog you into 05.
Yeah, no question. They were big turning points. Another one that I think about now, too, is when we played LSU down there in 05, mm-hmm. and then we came back and played Western. After that ball game at LSU down there, I knew we were going to be a really good football team. Because you're talking about the talent level,
yes.
and the speed of that they had and the size. We'd really have to work hard at messing it up. I mean, we'd had a chance to be pretty darn good. And, you know, when you mentioned that about the facilities a while ago, I thought about there weren't but about three or four times in my coaching career here that I sent them in. I mean, we were practicing so poorly. I sent them in. I said, get off the field. And I don't know what went on in the locker room. I didn't go there. But I just sent them off the field. And I'm thinking today, and I don't mean with this team right now, but I meant today, because you mentioned the facilities, it might not hurt to go dress in the old locker room for a week.
Yeah. By the way, Richie's still pissed you took him off the LSU game. He's still pissed about that.
Oh man,
he's gonna be on next on this next week's show. We talked to him. I guess it was.
Let me tell you about recruiting Richie.
Yes,
his mom and dad are here. He's from Camden, where Sean's from. So bring him in. His dad's a good sized man. His mom was a really good basketball player. So they're all three sitting in the chair in the office, and you know, it's kind of formal for about 2 minutes, and then we get to talking and all that stuff. And I said, Richie, I said, I don't know where you're going to play. I don't know where we're going to play you, because he's just a good athlete. I said, you could be a defensive back, you could be a receiver, or you might be a quarterback. A lot of times when you take a guy that is a quarterback, he doesn't want to hear receiver or defensive back. But, you know, he came anyway. And it's kind of like what I was talking about a while ago. He wanted to be here. It didn't make any difference. He wanted to play at Appalachian State. Sean may have had something to do with that. I don't know. But
a little bit.
Go back to that LSU game for a second. It's one of my favorite Jerry Moore stories came out of that game. I go and see Coach a lot. After games were over with, we'd usually meet on Monday and again on Wednesday, and I went in there on Monday, and he said, hey, there was this guy, and he's down on the field with Les Miles before the game, and the guys warming up, and a lot of them don't have their jerseys on and all this kind of stuff, and he said, I'm sitting there watching this offensive lineman throw the ball 60 yards, 70 yards. There was no distance he couldn't throw the ball. And he said, and I looked at Les Miles. I said, hey, you've got a great program. You've got offensive linemen that can throw the ball farther than our quarterback. And he looked at Coach Moore and he said, that's Jamarcus Russell. And Coach said, he said, I knew we were in for it right then.
That's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. Well, safe to say that, you know, any time we end up talking about different teams and different players, different coaches and different staffs, there's nothing happens in a silo. Nothing happens isolated from itself. There's always a reason. There's always a chain reaction. And, you know, and we're seeing it now even, I mean, closer to home, that what the 2015 team went through in 2013 with the turnover and then the first half of 2014, and they fought to get to where they are now. How hard it is to sustain the highs of the program, and how hard it is. I mean, when we had Dave Pastuzik on, who played the mid-90s, talking about just how, you know, you practice and you're so ready to play these games and you're a good team. But that one particular, I remember Steve talking about that, the playoff game they lost in 95, about how the ball doesn't bounce your way. That's, you play one game poorly, you have a series of
you know, sloppy play, and it ruined it. It's just so hard to do these things. And the reason we wanted to have this event as we kind of wind down here, you know, we don't want to forget what these different teams in these moments mean to us, just so that we can appreciate what we have more. And so 2007 was a really big deal to everybody in this room, whether you were a student there or a fan. And I just, you know, Charles, I know both of us, I mean, who are we? We're really nobodies.
We're just guys watching.
Just dudes. We're just dudes. And the fact that we're able to get people together and talk about what we love it's an honor. And so, I can't thank David Jackson enough. I mean, seriously, David and Steve both day one have supported what we're doing. And Coach Moore, the fact that he would take time here, him and Miss Margaret, for being here talking about this. Charles and I, we really feel like these guys are part of the pod. We really do. And we're stuck with David. And that's okay. I'm just kidding. I mean, we really do love. You could tell that we really love these guys. And I don't know if they feel the same. Maybe one day. But we really appreciate everybody. Seriously, we appreciate everybody for being here. It is a huge deal to us, and we want to do more stuff like this. And we just wanted to see how this would work. And thank you very much for spending your time here. And it's a weekday. It's a weekday at lunch for a game that they're not letting us park at a certain time. So, I mean, it's a sacrifice. So we appreciate it. Charles, I don't know if you have anything you want to.
No, I just kind of echo that. Nobody had to be here today. They chose to be here, and that makes us feel really special, not just because for me and Alex, but the others that joined us at the table, you know, the other more popular people than us by far. So hope everyone had a good time.
Yeah, we hope.
We're not like ending and leaving now. So
yeah.
we got time to hang around. Yeah. How long do we rent this place out for?
I don't know. It's Ricky's deal. We'll get with him when the bouncers show up breaking thumbs. We'll know that we're overstaying our welcome. But in all seriousness though, thank you guys for being here.
And one other thing before we leave, we joke about my woman back there, Margaret, but she's had a huge impact. Huge, huge impact on players from 1989 and now then wives and children. She talks to Desiree, Armani's wife, almost weekly. We got more pictures of Armani's family than we do our own. and just like coming in here, we got a deal about Matt Stevens. She got his phone number and she spends a lot of time with these players. When she retired from teaching, she'd sit in the stands and watch practice. Man, you think about catching a tough time. When I got home, she wanted to know why we did this and why we did that, all that kind of stuff. But she has a great heart for Appalachian. She got a great heart for these players. And she and Steve have had a lot of fun playing golf together.
Tell her about her correcting my English, Coach. Tell her about that.
About what now?
Correcting my English.
You tell her.
We're playing at a fundraiser. I don't know if y'all know, but Coach was a hell of a football player, and he's pretty competitive. So me and Margaret got on the same team, and after about three or four holes, I let out a few cuss words. And she came over and put her arm around me. She said, you know, you can say piffle. I said, piffle? What the hell's that? So after about three or four more holes, I shanked one of the woods. I think Mr. Epley back there is playing with us, and I say S-H-I, you know. She said, piffle, piffle. So at the end of the day, I'm going piffle about every other fairway. I'm in the woods, and I'm like, this lady's got me saying piffle.
He's got it stitched on his back. Though, so, hey, seriously.
We've had a good time.
Yeah, let's give a round of applause for Miss Margaret, seriously. Literally, he's here because she's here. That's the truth. So thank you very much, Margaret. Thank you.
You want to close with?
Yeah.
I'd just like to thank everybody. It's good to see a lot of people out here. And I've enjoyed doing the radio. I actually did the radio in two stints with Brian Estridge and 1 year with Mike Waddell, which we try to eliminate. And then a bunch of years with David. And a couple of you guys and ladies have said a couple of nice things to me and David. We enjoy doing it. And I told David it was a lot of fun to do things with people that you enjoy doing with. And I think that came through with today, these guys doing the podcast, Coach Moore and Miss Margaret, getting him on time. Thank you, Miss Margaret. But we appreciate all the fans and miss doing the radio. Don't miss some of the stuff that went along with it. But do miss hanging out on Saturdays and doing the games with David for sure.
Yeah, I think Coach hit the nail on the head, you know, and kind of to your point about the 40 weeks, man, we were together a lot. 15 games a year times 3 years times a lot of other events and things like that. And yeah, you get a chance to see people grow up. You get a chance to see their kids grow up. And those were times that we'll never forget. But I love this guy right here. I think we've all been in situations where we've all helped each other out at some points. And certainly Brownie's been that way for me. We had a lot of fun doing what we did. I've had this date circled on my calendar for months because I knew I got to sit with this guy on my left again, and we just get to talk about app football. And there were a lot of things that we talked about that you didn't get a chance to hear. Our reaction to plays sometimes was interesting. It got more interesting in the new building when the coaches were right next to us, and we had to make sure that we weren't
politically correct.
We weren't as directional with some of our antics at that point, but we called that game against James Madison in 07, and I think I called that fumble being recovered by Pierre on Brown's back. I was literally on top of him like this, and because we were just like you. You guys were celebrating the stands. We got a chance to celebrate the booth, and it's been awesome to be up here. We would not be here without this guy. And everything that he did and everything that he was about, all of us have some element, all of you have some element of Jerry Moore in what you do and say and how you react. And it's about people and how you're going to finish and trust and respect and all that fun stuff. We didn't all have to lay on steps to put it out there for players to see. But Coach, thank you for setting us up with this. Thank you all for coming today. Thanks to Alex for getting bored one night and starting all of this. It's awesome to see how technology has brought different ways for us all to communicate. So, fantastic event, man. Glad we could be
open
part
bar on Alex.
And one of the things that Alex made sure that this event did, and you all know this as you bought tickets, part of your ticket proceeds are going directly to Coach Moore's Endowed Scholarship Fund.
That's right.
So we can keep more great talent coming up here playing for Black and Gold, which is
absolutely
awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys, everybody. Thank you very much.